Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, and I'm here with Dom. Today on the show, we're going to be going over the latest episode of Survivor. But before we get to that, let's talk about what we just posted, which is our episode covering all of the Amazing Race, Celebrity Apprentice, and Russell Hanson's new show Flipped Off. We went over that with our buddy Matt Rodriguez. That's up on the blog now. It's up on iTunes, so definitely check that out. That was a lot of fun. Even if you don't watch all the shows, we threw up where each show starts within that podcast episode, so you can skip around. So definitely look into that. And then just as a reminder again, after this week's episode of Survivor and before the finale, we're going to be joined for our finale preview episode by Albert from season 23, from last season, Albert Destrade. So you're very excited to have him back on. So anything else to add, Dom, before we get into the last couple weeks of Survivor?
Yeah, we had a sort of momentary blip last week, so we apologize for that. Certain internet issues, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, my roommate didn't pay the internet bill. Sorry about that, guys, but it's back up now.
I wasn't going to be specific, but if you want to call him out, then that's fine.
I do.
So we have the Survivor finale preview show next week with Albert. After the finale, we're going to have a season review show. We're not sure if we're going to have a guest for that yet. We'll let you know about that. And then over the summer, we're going to have various podcasts about non-Survivor-related stuff, just to tide us over until the next season starts. So we'll give you more info on that as that develops as well.
Yeah, and also over the summer, we're, I'm assuming, going to be doing Big Brother for the most part, unless I'm mistaken about that, Dom.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, yeah, so we'll have that very regularly over the summer. So actually, you know, because we missed last week, we definitely want to touch on, certainly not all of it, but some of the bigger things that happened last week. And I think one of the key things that we should definitely talk about, and I think it's where we want to start, is last week both the reward and immunity challenges, Kim won. And then the things I think worth discussing about that is who she picked for the reward, and then basically what she should be in terms of, because I would say just right off the bat, I don't think she should be trying to win all these challenges.
If we want to go through the episode chronologically, one thing we need to note from the recap was Kim was given credit for bringing the women together and for their, quote, dominance over the men. I think this isn't an obvious clue that she wins, but I think the fact that she alone is being identified as the person responsible for this is significant.
Yeah, and it seems like it's that way every single recap that they do, every single previously on. It says Kim did this, and then when the men were still there, it was Troy, Zane, and Jay were getting punished.
Right, and to jump forward to this episode's recap, again, it was Kim and the women, not just the women. So you have to imagine that if somebody like Chelsea or Sabrina won, that they would receive more just gratuitous mentions. But instead, it's all the focus is on Kim.
Yeah, I want to point out, actually, when I was writing down the breakdown for this week's podcast episode, I don't even have first place equities on there, because I think it's honestly safe to say, given this week's boot, I think we both have Kim very close to 100%, if not 100%.
Well, that's depressing, because I was going to ask you how much actually you're going to give to Kat this week.
I had Kat at 2% coming in here, but probably a little bit lower than that after the events of this week's episode. But let's back up again. Let's go back to the one we missed last week. In terms of, yeah, it was another episode where it was the Kim show, probably highlighted because she won both challenges. And in terms of the reward challenge, I want to talk briefly about who she ended up picking, because she ended up picking, I believe, Chelsea and Alicia to go with her. And Alicia was immediately the first one she picked, which I think was correct, but I think Chelsea was a poor pick second.
Yeah, definitely. Stephen Fishback actually made some fairly good arguments defending Kim, one of which was that, sure, it may seem like Chelsea's her closest ally at the moment, but you can't just say that for granted. For someone to be your closest ally, they have to have constant validation of that. So if you're just always taking other people on rewards, you're never having strategy discussions with them, then eventually they're going to think, well, maybe we're not as close as I thought we were. I'm not sure if that's a great argument here, because I think that Chelsea is so stupid that Kim would just be able to get her back on the side anyway. So I think she definitely should have taken somebody else.
Well, I also would say that regarding that argument, that no matter who you take, someone's going to feel that way, and it would probably be better for the person who already trusts you more, that you're already actually closer to be the one saying, oh, well, I'm somewhat disappointed I didn't get to go on this reward, rather than the person who's actually at the bottom that you're truly concerned about flipping.
Definitely. And specifically, you don't want to piss off Kat, who you know is going to react emotionally. I think if the same thing had been done to Sabrina, I think Sabrina obviously would have been annoyed, but she would have got over it pretty quickly. And as Sabrina said herself, she didn't care about not going on the board because she knew, or at least this is the logic that she told herself, that Kim wanted the most stable people back at camp in order to keep things under control. So I think taking, if she had broken a promise to Sabrina, it would have been fine. Breaking a promise to Chelsea, it would have been fine. Breaking a promise to someone like Alicia or Kat, just not a smart thing to do.
Yeah, and I think Kim did a good job kind of giving Sabrina like a logical and self-esteem-boosting reason for why she couldn't take her on the reward, which I think is a sign of a very good player. In terms of, we didn't see a scene of Kim saying, oh, I'm not going to pick you because we need stable people. But I believe she probably said something along those lines for Sabrina to be getting that impression so clearly. And I think in terms of when you're not going to be taking people on reward as the reward winner, the more complimentary the reason you can give them for why they weren't chosen, the better.
Right. I think winning before challenges like this is a poor idea in general, but a good player can use it to their advantage if they're able to give reasons like that. You're able to boost someone's esteem, you're able to have time with people who you need to get closer to, and you're able to shore up a relationship there. So it can do good work for you if you're able to exploit that. Is there anything else worth mentioning about the reward challenge, do you think? Other than, obviously, what the answers to the specific questions were, and we'll go on to that in a minute.
Right, yeah, I mean, the challenge itself is interesting. All right, I'm assuming we'll talk about that a bit.
Sure.
Yeah, this is the sheep challenge, correct?
Yeah.
Basically, yeah, it's a Survivor classic. We see it many, many times, where everyone fills out a survey, and then the goal of the challenge is to guess whose name came up the most often for the question that Probst ends up reading.
Right, although Jeff himself seems to have forgotten about this, because he acts as if the answers that people give are the answers that reflect what they themselves think. So if someone says, who do you think is the biggest poser, and the answer is Troyzan, then it seems like Jeff always says, oh, Alicia thinks the biggest poser is Troyzan, when obviously that might not be the case.
Thinks the biggest poser is Troyzan, right. Yeah, and this is a game we play every week, we've played a couple weeks now this season in the 2 plus 2 thread, or a very similar game. Anyway. It's a game we've both played before, trying to pick what the group decides. And then obviously the caveat to this game is that when you can correctly pick out, who the group thought was, who sheeped that question, as they say, you get to take a chop at someone's ropes, and after three chops, that person's out and can't then win the reward. And we've seen we've seen this challenge many, many times, beginning in the Marquesas, and it ended up changing the course of that season dramatically, because it completely exposed the dominant alliance. And I thought actually, I potentially could have harmed Kim winning this, because you often see a very popular player win it. You know, not necessarily always the person at the top of the totem pole, but it's never someone anywhere close to the bottom winning it.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I think it is, if you look back through the history of all the people who won the challenge, usually it isn't the person at the very top of the alliance. It's someone who's maybe in the middle somewhere, who isn't really on anybody's radar. And so, I remember Fiji, for instance. Earl was in complete control of everything by that point. His rope still got chopped enough so that he got out pretty quickly. And Cassandra ended up winning. Now, Cassandra wasn't in the best position in the game, but no one really cared enough about her to chop her rope, so she ended up winning. Same in Micronesia, where Parfait and Cerie were in control, and then Alexis ends up winning.
In All Stars, I think Rupert won it.
Right, so we see this principle come up over and over again. So it's actually quite surprising to me that Kim ended up winning this.
Right, but I think the general idea is that people are obviously going to then associate the winner of this challenge with, oh, people like this person.
Right.
Which could be a bit concerning if you are Kim. I would probably, if I was Kim, I would want to be out of this challenge quickly.
Right. If I was Kim, it would be nice to have a public display of the fact that people like me, in the sense that now I know that, okay, I can actually win a jury vote against most combinations of people. On the other hand, now that that's out in the public domain, people know about that and can react accordingly if they're smart, which apparently they aren't.
Right, and I would say I would have more confidence about being able to win those jury votes before that challenge rather than the amount of confidence I would lose about being a public jury threat after that challenge.
Right, I'd be more confident about winning. I'd be less confident about being in a position to win because I'm now at a high risk of being taken out before that.
That's right. all right, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think it's worth going through the questions that were asked and the answers that people gave to them.
Sure.
So the first question is, who doesn't deserve to be here? And the sheep answer was Christina, which you have to think, if your intention is to disguise who's at the bottom of your alliance, given that Troyzan is in the game, surely you just answer every negative question with Troyzan.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It seems like this is, and it seems like it, that seems so obvious when it's so clearly 7 against 1. because I'm grouping Tarzan now in with the women, where for anything negative, I can see how certain people may put Christina at the bottom, but I can't see how the majority of people would put Christina at the bottom, just because it seems like there are enough people who understand not to do that.
Right. Even if you think that everybody else is putting Christina at the bottom, the correct play there is still to put down Troyzan, because you know that no one else is going to care that you put Troyzan instead, because he's obviously the backup answer. Like, if you had people list their answer, Troyzan would be number two for all the people who put Christina first.
Mm-hmm.
So then Christina is now going to look upon you more favorably. So if you need to vote in a later round or something, or if you need a jury vote, that's going to be more likely. And similarly, the Troyzan, like, he knows that he's going to be the cheap answer, so he's not going to take offense at it.
I think one thing worth noting is I don't think they tell the players who put what for what specifically. So I think one thing, well, I think thinking players may be able to do is back at camp, whoever sheeps all the negative ones can still go up and say, hey, I didn't put you for that. Just
right,
tell everyone they didn't put them.
But I think people wrongly associate, people don't get the idea of sheep. I think they associate the answer people give with what those people are actually thinking a lot of the time.
Yeah, which is fair enough. I don't know. I think it's just playing sheep on 2+2 has me in that super paranoid, like, level 2 stage. I don't know.
Right. It's entirely possible that everyone individually thinks that the right answer is Troyzan, but because it's sheep, they all put Christina. Like, that is theoretically possible, and that may indeed be what happened, but you don't sort of tend to think on that level if you're out there and you're not accustomed to playing sheep every week.
Yeah, and again, this game is particularly fun on Survivor because most of the questions are very negative, and we've had, historically, like, Courtney in Exile Island got just pummeled on their season, getting, like, all the negative ones, and Alicia in All Stars, I think, got, like, least deserving and took it really poorly and got super hurt feelings, and that was fun times.
Yeah, so moving on to the next question. Who needs a wake-up call in life? Kat, not surprising at all. I hope even you would agree with me there.
Absolutely.
Who is the biggest poser? Troyzan, which, again, is a sheep answer and the correct answer.
It's the sheep answer, exactly. And I don't even understand the point of that question other than to just... I understand that many of the questions are designed to hurt people's feelings, but that doesn't even seem like it hurts feelings. It's just weird to me.
Yeah, I love this kind of manufactured drama, but it seems like that's not even going to cause that.
Right.
So the next question is, who does least around camp, which is revealing in its own way, and the answer there is Sabrina. But people don't seem to be angry at her about it, in the same way that they're resentful towards, I can't think of an example off the top of my head, but we've seen in the past, people get mad at people for being lazy around camp, and doesn't seem like that's the case here.
No, it doesn't. It seems like it was one of those, oh, everyone's going to have kind of a laugh at this person. Kind of like in Fiji, I think Dreams got like the who smells the worst one. I don't think he took it personally. It's just a kind of a goof in there.
Sure. Then maybe one of the more revealing questions is, who would you want to be stranded on an island with? And the answer there is Kim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know what the answer is, because I think it was worth noting several people, or at least a couple people, put Troyzan down as their sheep answer for
Tarzan,
that.
Tarzan, rather.
Oh, wait, what's that?
Tarzan, rather.
They put Tarzan down?
Yeah, but Christina put Troyzan, and then the camera cut to a shot of Sabrina just looking at her with this weird look from the...
Well, because I can get behind the line of thinking for either of them, thinking to themselves, okay, this is six women now filling out this survey compared to two men. They're probably going to want to be stranded with a man. Although, granted, probably not with one of these two men.
I don't know. Surely you just want to be stranded with your friends, and that's a natural answer.
No, yeah, I wouldn't ultimately just arrive at that being the correct line of thinking, but I can at least see how they arrived at that.
Right. I think one thing that was probably going through a lot of people's heads was, I'm expected to put Kim. Like, the natural answer here is Kim. If I don't put Kim, then Kim herself, being in control of everything, is going to start, having ideas about where my mind's really at.
Yeah, and actually, a bit more history here. I remember JT sweeping this one, I think, unanimously in Token Chains when they did this.
And the same thing with Earl on the who would you trust with your life question.
Did Bob get it as well, or am I making that up?
They didn't do it in that season, so no.
Oh, okay. All right, then I guess I'm making it up.
Yes, you are. Then, who do you want to never see again after the game? And the answer here is Troyzan, predictably.
Yeah, of course.
Anything to say about that, or is that...
No, that's straightforward. at that point, where he's the one antagonizing literally everyone on the camp.
Yeah, speaks,
or everyone
yeah.
on the tribe, yeah.
Speaks for itself, really. So, then, as we said, Kim wins, makes some fairly questionable picks. And I think, as viewers, we kind of understate the importance of reward challenges, but people have been out there. I know Stephen's touched on this theme a bit, and a lot of other people have as well. We're all trying to just take on this contrived importance because you have nothing else to do out there. You know, you have, in this 3-day span, you have tribal council and two challenges. So for the rest of the time, you're talking, and then before the reward challenge, most of the conversations are about, okay, well, I'll take you if you take me, you know, who do we take, yeah, this sort of thing. So they, since you have nothing else to do, you start talking about the reward challenges, so they acquire this significance that really they shouldn't have at all, if the people are thinking rationally.
Yeah, it's just out of boredom. There's no, like you said, there's nothing else to do out there. For us, it's 40 minutes and 5 minutes of reward challenge, and that's all we see, and we don't see the time in between challenges apart from the very notable things that go on at camp. But we see in a given episode about 20 minutes of camp life that takes place over 72 hours, and they have another 71 hours and 40 minutes of time to kill there.
Right. All right, so after this challenge, we get back to camp, and Kat's pissed off, predictably. So now Troy-Zan starts badgering her about flipping the game around and trying to vote out one of the women, which seems like the worst way possible to approach the situation there. Like, the last thing that Kat's going to want to hear about at that point is some contrived plea from Troy-Zan.
I don't know, because again, it's one of those things where I don't necessarily think this is right or how I would do it, but I can understand why he would do that. And I think it's the same thing that I said about Michael, or at least similar, earlier in the season. Michael and Christina, I think, entering the merge, where his best plan is to just make something happen, anything, and just try to find any kind of crack. And I think he may have jumped on something a bit desperately, but I honestly think in that situation, you'd really just be searching for anything you can find. I think that was a big hole, given relative to any other opportunity you could have anticipated.
Right. You definitely want to be trying to plant that idea in her mind, but I don't think that doing it that aggressively is the way to do it, because she's staying in a fragile state emotionally, so there's no reason to, you know, pour gas on that fire.
Right, yeah, and I guess one thing he could do is perhaps, like, I don't know if he's in such a position where he could be, like, consoling to her, or if that would even work, but that would at least be one other way to approach it, rather than, okay, now you're pissed off, let's flip the game around on the people you're pissed off at, but instead be like, oh, it's all right, and I don't even know what approach to take, I'd be horrible at it. But I guess, yeah, I would tend to agree that he was perhaps over-aggressive there.
Right, and then we see Sabrina accompanying Kat in expert fashion, and I think this is evidence for the claim that we see in this most recent episode for why Sabrina might be a jury fed. She has this way with people, and she seems pretty articulate as well.
Yeah, I think more so than anything with Sabrina, she seems very honest. I think we said the same thing about Jonas earlier. I think that's why a lot of people trusted Jonas, and that's why a lot of people trust Sabrina. And I think for the most part, we've seen her be very honest. The only thing we've seen her do, even remotely shady in my mind, was that conversation on the reward with Kim. Just talking about the end game.
Sure. So then we see Troy-Zan boasting that he's planted his seed in Kat, which I imagine you're very envious of.
Yeah, if only. But yeah, who knows? Troy-Zan, this episode, honestly, to me, wasn't overly suspenseful as soon as he lost in immunity. But even before that, they weren't giving him an edit like anything else was ever going to happen this episode.
Right. I think if you've seen many episodes before, you're aware of all the editor's tricks by now. So at the beginning of the episode, there's going to have this theme like, oh, somebody else did something stupid. Maybe they're going to get voted out instead, but you know that that's never going to happen.
Yeah, we saw kind of the reverse of this with Cochran last year, where every episode was, oh, Cochran's finally going to go now, and then he would never end up going until he ultimately went, obviously.
Well, that's something we can discuss a bit later, but I thought that was interesting because then the preview for that episode was we saw Rick and Albert fighting and all these things getting mixed up. And then ultimately, what everyone would have predicted beforehand happened and Cochran went home. This season, we saw something similar. So we saw Kat versus Sabrina in the preview. And I thought, well, okay, so that means Tarzan's just going to go home because that's kind of default option. But we actually saw Kat go, which surprised me a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Although the thing is, I feel like Tarzan, if you're paying close enough attention, has really been in with Kim, at least in terms of his actions. And in terms of his words, Tarzan, I actually want to talk about a little bit. And maybe we better save that for later, but I feel like Tarzan is perhaps doing himself a bit of a disservice in terms of how open he's being with everyone in this game. And I think we should save that actually for the new episode discussion.
Sure. Yeah, well, remind me to touch on that later. So okay. After this, they come back, Kim and the other people who went on the reward come back to camp, and we see Piggate, if we want to call it that.
Right, oh, this was weird. I remember writing in my show notes, like, oh, I guess the producers flipped a coin, and this was the day that they were going to release the next pig.
I like it. I liked it, though, because it broke the monotony of the episode.
Yeah, that's true. It's always fun when something interesting happens at camp that doesn't really have to do with much else. Like, of course, in Samoa with the chickens getting loose and Eric Cardona clotheslining himself.
Yes. This incident with the pig was kind of microcosm of the whole season, because we see, you know, Sabina, like, being happy about it. We see, you know, Kat and Alicia freaking out and spazzing all over the place. And then we see Kim remain, like, 100% strategic, not showing emotion at all, like, oh, the pig coming into the camp is really great for me, it lightens the mood, like, as if you were, like, teaching a robot to analyze human interaction, and the result is Kim.
I also liked that the response was, Troy, go get the pig.
It's bossing around. Yeah, it's like, it seems like everything that happens in life couldn't work out any better for Kim. Everything gives her lots of options. It's like, well, I woke up this morning and this is really good for me. It means I'm not dead. It gives me lots of options moving forward.
I can decide if I want to go to the post office first today. I could always eat cereal or a muffin. We don't know yet. Yeah. Come for the survivor analysis, stay for the comedy.
Of course. What do you make of Kim's personality? Because I've seen a lot of people kind of getting frustrated, because it seems like we don't really get to know her as a person. Or if we do, there's not much there to get to know.
What I noticed, and this is jumping ahead to the newest episode a bit, but what I noticed, her sister was very similar, I thought, during the family visit, where they were both just, even while they were out there, just super analytical and very calm and cool, like, yeah, I've got to talk about her options, I've got so many options, and I think this is my best plan for winning, and all that, no one likes Alicia. Yeah. It was very telling. I think that's just how they roll. They just are very calm people, I guess.
They also sound exactly the same.
They do.
You notice it. I went on the... Because I'm from the UK and we don't get to watch the CBS videos on the website because, you know, evil nationalist bastards. So I had to watch this on YouTube, and in the comment section for her sister's confessional, you had the usual comments like, oh, Kim's sister's hot, hotness runs in the family, that sort of thing. And then one guy saying, I wasn't paying attention to the video and I thought this was just another Kim confessional talking about her sister. Because they sound identical.
Yeah. Her sister also equally not bad on the eyes.
Well, yes.
Well, perhaps less equally. Kim's probably the hotter one. But anyway, what else do we have to say about that?
Well, the family rules.
Oh, no, that, we'll save that for later, actually. That's the new episode.
Sure. So, after this, what happens? We get to the immunity challenge, which is worth talking about for its own reasons, mainly because of the fact we get to see Chelsea lubing up.
Absolutely. And hopefully not for the last time.
Yeah, I think this should be a mandated requirement at every single challenge now.
Every single challenge. Chelsea, about the oil, baby.
At least up for Tarzan, at least. Because we don't want to see that.
Yeah, this was, you know, obviously, probably the most famous incarnation of this challenge was in Heroes vs. Villains. It was a pre-merge challenge where they were, you know, you had Parvati all oiled up and Amanda, and then for the ladies, James was all oiled up and everything, and it was a big to-do on the forums with all the pictures.
Yeah, there are definitely lots of good gifts coming out of that episode.
Yeah, but this, again, this immunity was pretty anticlimactic. Obviously, as soon as Troyzan went out, it was game over and pretty much episode over.
Yeah, although I did like how there was lots of latent lesbianism at this challenge, because it seems like after every heat concluded, each of them would kind of hug each other in this weird, like, almost sexual way, I don't know.
Don't jinx it, Dom. We want to keep that coming.
And then we also saw Kat with this weird, like, spazzy dance, which...
You know what I loved was Kat running down the thing with, like, a little zombie waddle kind of thing. It was really funny. They shot it very well, of her just going straight across the frame.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, our description can't really do it justice, but if you haven't watched the episode yet, or if you have, go back and watch that bit.
It's fantastic
bizarre
stuff.
So then, after the immunity challenge... We come back to the scrambling back at camp, and Sabrina randomly tells Christina that her name's been written down as the, like, bounce back vote in case Shorzan plays an idol, which you think would be a mistake, but being results oriented, apparently it isn't, because Christina is generally that unaware of what's going on.
She was like, "All right, cool."
Yeah.
It took zero convincing. It was unreal. I couldn't. First of all, I don't understand why they would even tell her that in the first place. Apart from obviously they're not planning on an idol necessarily being played, so they don't really want to blindside her, having her name come up. So I can understand from that aspect, but I really don't feel like I think in a situation where Troy stands obviously looking for people to flip, you probably you're better looking for forgiveness than permission from Christina in that situation.
Right. It seemed like she didn't even register the fact that she would be going home if this happened.
Right. They're like, yeah, you're just going to get the second highest number of votes just in case Troy Zane has an idol. Oh, all right, that's fine. As long as the majority are still going on Troy Zane.
You wonder what she's spending all of this time doing, like, given that they have 3 days to think about this kind of thing. Does she just not, like, does she not go through this basic calculation in her head over the course of 72 hours?
Historically, there have been a few people throughout Survivor history that just kind of were clearly the bottom on their alliance, kind of like Edna. But I think Edna had more interaction with the people on Upolu who were keeping her close. But there have been some people who just knew they were the bottom throughout and just have done nothing. Just like, you often wonder, what do you do the whole time other than just show up to tribal council?
Right. Well, I think in all of those cases, you have a good player at the top of that alliance making them feel safe somehow. So if you remember when we talked to Sophie, she said that one of the reasons Edna felt so secure was that she would constantly be talking to her about, you know, women power when we get down to Ulupolu, and she had a final three deal with Edna. So Edna had reason to feel safe. It wasn't just an arbitrary thing, even if maybe those reasons weren't the best ones.
Yeah, no, and I agree with that, and that's why I think Edna was just my example of someone who was clearly on the bottom of their alliance. But yeah, I think she had many reasons to believe she was doing all right there.
Yeah. If you're looking to maintain this fiction to Christina that she's not at the bottom, do you think it's the correct move to actually throw these backup votes on her? Because it seems like if you put them on Tarzan instead, he's expecting to get them, and you can frame it as, well, it's the two remaining men is the obvious thing to do. It seems like this has obviously a very slight chance, as it turns out, but still a chance of awakening Christina to what's actually going on.
Yeah, it's a very good question. You know, I was curious as to why they didn't put him on Tarzan, and I remain curious. I know I've mentioned it, I think, the last couple of weeks about I'm really interested to see to find out after the end of the season what really is going on with Tarzan, and I imagine Kim, because he seems to be very in line with that whole thing, and she seems to be very unwilling to put votes, or not necessarily to put votes on him, but to vote him out. Certainly, after having voted out Kat before him this most recent episode, but also signaled, of course, by putting those extra votes on Christina in case Troy Zane played an idol. And so again, just because we don't really know too much about that, that's really what the decision's going to come down to for me. And again, like I've said so many times throughout the course of this season on the podcast, I feel like Kim's earned enough that we should be willing to trust her judgment on this kind of stuff.
Sure.
And for that reason, I would say that she's doing the right thing by keeping Tarzan around.
All right, yeah, because as you mentioned earlier, it seems like Tarzan defers to her in every aspect. Like, Tarzan knows that she's in control, so if he gets votes again, then he'll think it's her decision, and he'll start to question, like, his position within that group. So I can understand that logic, too.
Yeah, so I think in terms of this the episode we missed, I imagine you're on board with booting Troy Zane there.
Yeah, definitely. I think even for the people whose interest it might have been in to flip over and try and make something happen, I think you just have to wait for Final Seven, which is better both mathematically and contextually because you no longer have Troy Zane there, who potentially could win the game if he does make it to the finals.
That's right. And again, now that I think we're good to move on to the newest episode, which is, I'm imagining, why most people tuned in, unless you have anything else to add.
Well, I just wanted to add that we saw Alicia at Tribal Council exemplify the Sandra strategy of saying, it ain't my name, so I don't care. And I imagine that's not going to work out as well for her as it did for Sandra.
I would imagine you're right about that. So again, this is now, we're now down after we see Troy's going to get booted, we're down to seven people. And as we've touched on many, many, many times throughout the run of this podcast, Final Seven in Survivor is a very critical vote, perhaps the most critical in terms of generally setting up the end game. And if you'd like to hear more about that, actually, last season, when we got to the Final Seven, we went through and did an episode devoted entirely to Final Sevens throughout Survivor history. And so if you'd like to take a listen to that and really get an in-depth look at why Final Seven is so important, dig through the archives, and it's back there. So definitely check that out if you haven't already listened to it. But with that, let's move on, and
right,
let's get into this.
Yeah, that might seem excessive, but it really is that important. It is the turning point in the game if you want to make something happen. And like Colin said, if you want to hear like a more in-depth explanation as to why that is, then go back and listen to that, and hopefully that should clear it up. So this is, in theory, one of the more important episodes. Like we said earlier, we were both kind of surprised by the outcome, and we'll get to why in a minute. So do we want to go through this chronologically as well?
Yeah, I think so. But one of the things I want to start with off the bat is something I talked about a little bit earlier, which is Tarzan, because now Tarzan is obviously there with six other women, but he seems to be in a secure position. Obviously, we see Cap get voted out, and so, of course, he's in a secure position for this episode. But there are two things I want to talk about before we actually get into the episode itself. Because in terms of if you're Tarzan right now, and I know you love you some Tarzan, what are you trying to do? And I know this is a difficult question to answer because it's hard to get into the mind of Tarzan, I think.
Right. If you're talking about what Tarzan should do, it's difficult to answer because if you're trying to make a rational argument, then that argument isn't going to apply to Tarzan. He's not going to be able to grasp it properly. It's the same kind of thing where last season we said that, well, you know, what if Coach had actually owned up to his game at the finale, you know, maybe he would have won over Sophie or whatever. But had he done that, had he been the kind of rational player who would be able to do that, then he wouldn't have been in the finals with Sophie and Albert in the first place. Like, he would have tried to get Colvin after that with them instead. So, you can't, like, hold all these other assumptions constant and then ask these hypothetical questions. It just doesn't really make much sense.
All right, well, this is the thing. I would agree with most of that. I certainly agree with that premise of what you just ended on. But one of the things that I think we've been seeing the last couple episodes out of Tarzan is perhaps this guy's more of a thinking player than we realize. Like this episode we saw, when he was approached about the cat boot, he said, oh, I think that would be an error. And this is, I think he's made it clear on the grounds that Kat's not a thinking player and thus the thinking player should want to keep her in. And I feel like Tarzan, though, the whole point I think I'm really trying to drive at here before we get into the episode itself is I think Tarzan's doing himself a bit of a disservice by making those arguments so loudly in terms of those are very rational arguments. And if you're Tarzan, the reason you're still there is because people view you as kind of this irrational guy. And when you start making sense to thinking players, then that puts you kind of on their radar again.
Right, but this is very basic logic. Like, praising Tarzan for coming up with this is like praising kids for colouring between the lines. Like, it may be good for them, but it's not any kind of objectively worthwhile achievement.
No, and I'm not trying to praise Tarzan for this. I'm actually trying to criticize him a bit for this. And I know it's not music to your ears ever, but I think he's saying too much in terms of he's making it clear that he at least understands the position the game is currently in. And he's been quite, if I were Kim, I think as a smart player, I would then extrapolate, oh, this guy knows what's going on and he's just staying quiet because it's in his best interest.
Well, I think people's perceptions of him are kind of locked in at this point. And if he does make it to the end, which obviously needs to be his goal, then he needs to have something to hang his hat on. Like, he can't go in to Final Tribal Council having everyone think that he's this complete loon. Like, he does need to show the capacity for rational thought at some point, and this is a good place to do it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I don't know. I feel like saying, oh, by the way, I'm a doctor is a decent enough proof of rational ability.
Sure, but I don't think Pete...
Well, he's got not necessarily the best reputation right now.
Saying your daughter's a good proof that you're wealthy and don't need the money.
That's true. That's a solid counter-argument. So let's get into the episode itself. And this episode begins with something that's a reference to the previous episode, which we didn't touch on yet, but which we will right now, which is as Troyzan was on his way out, he stopped at Kat on her little perch at Tribal Council, and he leaned over and said, do it to her, as in insinuating, you know, go ahead and win. I guess the big question is, what did you make of that?
Well, it's typically retarded behavior from Troyzan, because if he does genuinely want Kat to win, that's the last thing he should be saying. Like, he should be doing that to someone like, I don't know, Sabrina or Chelsea or somebody who isn't Kat, because now not only are they going to think that Kat has Troyzan's vote locked up, they might begin to wonder, well, is that representative of the mood on the jury among the other men? And if that's the case, then Kat would be unbeatable, and you have to get rid of her as soon as you can.
Right.
So it's just, I don't see what he was trying to do here.
Well, the reality of the situation now that I think is suddenly setting in on the women is that there are going to be six men on the jury. Right. Or presumably, unless they're at minimum five, and five is the majority of nine.
Sure.
And it's another one of those situations where the tribe that just got picked off post-merge and doesn't really know the tribe that picked them off is going to be the one deciding the winner.
Well, in this case, though, it's not like the men came from a unified tribe, because obviously you had Mike versus Troyzan, you had Jay and Troyzan being willing to vote out Mike, and, you know, they weren't particularly close with Jonas, and now you have Leaf, who's just kind of out there. Like, this isn't a group that is necessarily going to vote together.
Right, and also you have the entire One World twist, which means they've known the women from day one, so it's not nearly going to be as stranger of a jury as we've seen in many, many previous seasons.
Right, this might be a good time to discuss that, actually. One of the benefits of the One World twist, which We didn't focus on it in much detail when we discussed it in the season preview podcast, was that it is going to make the jury discussion a lot more fair, hopefully, because we're no longer going to have a situation where, at its extreme, you know, some of the jurors haven't even been on the same beach as one of the finalists before. Like, we've seen that...
Thailand. They were on the same beach, but I think Aaron in Thailand was never on the same tribe as Brian and Clay.
Well, I was thinking mainly of things like Fiji and Heroes vs. Villains, where the merge was late, but the jury started earlier, which meant that, for instance, Rocky in Fiji had never been on Tribe of Cassandra, or...
Right. Brad in Cook Islands, I think, also.
Yeah, same thing. You know, he'd never been on Tribe with Ozzy. So, situations like that is just unfair, because now that juror is naturally going to be predisposed towards one person, and you know, rational argument isn't going to be able to talk them out of it most of the time. Now, though, everyone has the same opportunity to interact with all of the jurors, so it's more of their own fault if they you know, fail to convince them or something.
Right. Yeah, and it's certainly an interesting thing, and I think you make the overall point, which is that we're hopefully going to get a more fair jury. Not necessarily, I don't know that fair is even the right word, but a less easily influenced jury in terms of shifting people's impressions upon Marissa.
Right, I think fair carries with it connotations that maybe don't apply here, but a jury which is more open-minded, shall we say.
Right, yeah, I think the implication that doesn't apply is that it otherwise is unfair, and that's not the right word. Yeah,
sure.
Okay. Yeah, we appreciate good diction. It's been made known. All right, so let's get in further. Let's get into this episode because the first thing we see before the theme song is Alicia is now recognizing Sabrina as a threat, and this is a theme we see a little bit later down the line in this episode. Alicia gets a nice opening confessional, or a couple confessionals right in the opening. On the ground, she's saying Sabrina's a threat because she's going to be good at tribal council, she's good at the current tribal councils and thus will be good, in front of a jury, as opposed to someone like Christina, who is, as Alicia would put it, like horrible at tribal council, and I think that's pretty close to fair.
She made a good point, but then she also went on to say that she was the most powerful player in the game, which,
right,
to borrow a term from Kim, is delusional.
Yeah. I think that's a term, you know, that's not the first time we've used that term to describe Alicia.
Definitely
we've been
not.
Hitting her with that one early and often. But,
yeah.
But this was one of the things, you know, what I basically took away from that is I think Alicia is actually may end up as one of the finalists. I think we've been seeing a lot more of Alicia, and I think what we're now most likely looking at, given the cat's now gone, and now that we're seeing this kind of we're seeing people viewing Sabrina as a threat, is a Kim, Chelsea, Alicia final three, which I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's very possible. I think Alicia's received more development as a character than Christina has. And obviously, we've seen more of Tarzan just because of his over-the-top antics, but he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who would be in the finals. Because if we think back to Redemption Island, we had somebody who was arguably similar in the form of Philip, but even Philip had content related to the game more. So, you know, I have this argument which I'm going to bust out that I might be able to beat Rob with, stuff like that. You know, I have this master plan or whatever. We haven't seen that kind of thing from Tarzan, which makes me think that, you know, he leaves maybe next episode, maybe sometime in the finale. It doesn't make it to the final three.
Yeah, and I think also along those same lines, we'll have every reason to understand why Alicia receives zero votes at Final Tribal Council. Were she to get there?
Yeah, definitely.
And we'll also understand like why Chelsea may get a couple votes. Were she to get a couple votes, and why Kim would win, of course.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So moving on from that. reward challenge, how about that? And this, actually, before the reward challenge, is we get the tree mail, and of course, they get the Sprint phone, so they all know what time it is. It is family visit time, the annual family visit on Survivor. We've seen it, I think, every single season. All but a couple have had this actual family come in on the island itself, which I like. And I also like that in the videos themselves, they're clearly out on the island, and Probst doesn't bullshit them and say, oh, you know, no matter what, you're not going to see anyone. I hate it when he does that, because they always come out.
Especially in Vanuatu, where they set up this hut with a screen that changed and like made it look like it was some location that wasn't on the island. Just get on with it, fuck's sake.
Yeah.
I did like how Sabrina started angling for a promotional gig with Sprint, saying, I never thought Sprint would be this good to me. Like, it's not Sprint that's been this good to you, it's like, it's a phone. It doesn't need to be a Sprint phone. It's not like Sprint uniquely captured the technology of taking videos of people.
Yeah, and then when they get back to the camp with the Sprint phone, they try to do the classic double reverse psych out on the rest of the tribe with like a fake tree mail thing, which has been attempted many times and only actually been pulled off once well, in my opinion. And that was, of course, by Rob's sister Nino in All Stars, when he had Sue Hawk convinced that they were going to have to eat bugs. And the reason it was pulled off well is because he came up with an entirely new rhyming clue.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive.
You can't just half-ass this kind of prank.
Right. I had something incredibly witty and insightful that I was going to say, and I can't remember what it was.
All right, well, that's a big shocker.
So, moving on. Do we want to get into the reward challenge itself? It wasn't that interesting, I didn't think. It was just standard, okay, you're teaming up with your family, you're going through this rope course, and then whoever wins gets to take people with them. Obviously, the most interesting thing coming out of this is Kat picks Kim and then picks Alicia. Now, obviously, we think this is a stupid idea, but let's go into why a bit more.
Well, yeah, the main reasons why is, as we see with the family video and as we get led up to, as we're about to go to the reward challenge, is we find out a bit about each person's family, and most notably find out about Christina's father, who just had a kidney replacement and only has like 5-6 years, maybe 10 left to live, and she's all out there and they would love to have that experience together. And then also, we have a bit of a weird situation this season. Only one person is married, and thus only one spouse is coming out, and that's Tarzan. And we've seen this come up pretty much every time they do the family visit, where the whole tribe kind of figures out who really, quote, like, deserves to win to get to spend the most time with their family on the grounds of, like, who has the closest relationship. So that's what we're really getting set up for at the beginning of this reward challenge, is who we're supposed to want to see win.
Right, and following Terry Dees, there's this hierarchy of family members, so
right,
or of loved ones. So you have friends at the bottom, and then it goes up with, like, you know, sisters, husbands and wives, and parents, children, that sort of thing. Here, it's quite interesting this season that we have Tarzan, who's married, and Christina, who has a dad there, and he has his kidney condition, which is what makes it special. But we have no kids, which is fairly unusual, and so these two are clearly the ones who, quote-unquote, deserve it most, if you want to even apply that term.
Yeah, I actually noticed that as I was thinking about how odd it was that there was only one spouse. Tarzan and his wife don't have any kids, as I think they made it clear on the show. So I think I'm not completely positive about this, and I've done no research historically, but I think this is the first time that the final seven had zero combined kids, and I think it goes actually back to Troyzan. I think Leaf has kids. So final eight with no kids combined.
Yeah, I haven't done any research either, but it certainly wouldn't surprise me. So the point to take away from this is there are two clear choices here for Kat. So the first person you pick probably is Christina, so she gets to be with the dad, and the second person you pick is Tarzan. And then she just goes and spazzes it away, picks Kim and Alicia instead. Now, I think she made a good point, which was that, let's say she had taken Sabrina. Sabrina probably wouldn't have been bitching about it afterwards. I think this was as much like resentment over not being taken herself as resentment that these other two weren't being taken.
Sabrina was saying if she had been picked, she would have given it to Christina or Tarzan.
Right, but like as Kat said, I think it's very easy to say that when you haven't been picked either.
Alright, you don't think she has that Holly Hoffman gene in her?
Well, the thing is, I think Kat's point was correct, but even so, you still have to go along with it and take Christina and Tarzan.
Right.
It's obviously the correct thing to do strategically.
Yeah, and the incorrect thing to do strategically, I would argue, is to make it clear to the entire tribe that you're picking them not for strategic reasons, but because you think they'd be the most fun to get drunk with.
Right, I mean, this is typical Kat. This is why we love her, and why you had this creepy obsession with her. But
it's not a creepy obsession, I'm just a fan, dude. Get off my back. And this is, by the way, Florida college student, story checks out.
Yes.
In terms of Kat. Yeah. So I'm going to get drunk.
You need a classy woman like Amanda Miller. Anyway. So, we see Kat like, just rub salt in the wound, basically, by saying she just wants to take Kim and Alicia off and get drunk with them. This is past the point of repair now. Like she can't really do damage control effectively. And Kim, again, to Kim's credit, she realizes that this is going to be a problem. Like, people are going to be angry at her by proxy for going instead of Christina and Tarzan. And then she gets right on that when she gets back to camp.
Now, you call it a creepy obsession. I call it an undying support. But this was obviously a very, very bad episode for Kat, culminating in her getting voted off. But I feel like the entire time she was edited basically like a 12-year-old girl. It was, of course, not fun for me as a Kat supporter to watch this all go down. But I had a very bad feeling right off in the previously on when they once again showed Troy saying do it to her in terms of, oh, shit, that's going to come into play now. Yeah. So I was kind of anticipating all of this going down.
Yeah, you are right that people's boot episodes do tend to be bad for them. There is a positive correlation there.
in terms of you at least get people sometimes where they're booted on the grounds that they're too likable. Perhaps maybe someone like Dawn, where even on their boot episode, they're not viewed as some. In Kat's case, I would say like some spoiled preteen.
Sure. Yeah, I think they had the editors had a lot of fun with Kat this episode at her expense.
At her expense is right.
Right.
Yeah. But overall, though, before we, you know, we'll save the Kat eulogy for the end of this.
Or for some entirely different time. Like, we don't need to talk about it now if you don't want to.
No, sorry. I do that way too often, by the way. During the podcast, I talk way too much about when we're going to be doing stuff, and I show way too many scenes. I'm going to work on that.
And now you're pointing it out, just making it even more awkward.
Right, exactly. I'm taking this to a whole new level.
We should just get on and actually talk about it instead of talking about like, some weird meta level.
So, do we want to actually talk about what happens off on the reward? Because that's not overly. They just take a bunch of pictures, pretty much. And they say, they sit down and have an establishment like, okay, we've been the final three, we're going to be the final three. And Kim says to her sister, even, these two would probably be the best to take in terms of the final three. Anything worth really getting into from that trip?
I think so. The scene between Kim and her sister reminds me a lot of the scene between Rob and his sister from Dungeons Island, where the coverage of the reward focused on them and focused on. It didn't focus on their like interpersonal relationship or whatever. It was just pure strategy, once again. Like Kim saying, I'm going to go with these two. And significantly saying, these are the best option. Like, this is my best option for me to go to the final three with. I see a lot of people in the light of that saying that this was a bad episode for Kim because she identified this as the best option and, you know, now it's not even an option for her anymore.
Right. She identified it and then didn't go through with it. I wouldn't necessarily say that that's a bad episode for her. I would say that that's just editing misdirection.
Right, yeah. But we saw this a few times before, for instance, with Earl in the penultimate episode, where you know, he's shown as unaware of Stacey trying to turn on Yao Man and of Yao Man playing his idol. We saw it with Tom in Palau, where you know, he started to be portrayed as mean and negative and is starting to question whether he could actually win a jury vote or not. The penultimate episode and the like anti-penultimate episode, if you want to call it that, it is the best time for this kind of doubt to spring up for a dominant winner like Earl or Kim or Tom. So I don't think this is necessarily too bad for her.
Didn't something similar happen with Brian Heideck? Am I making that up? Where the doubt really started creeping in really late?
Yeah.
Right around this time?
Even with Boston Rob as well, to an extent, although less so.
There was no doubt there.
Right. So this isn't surprising. Like this is a continuation of a trend we've seen before.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly. And as mentioned, I think we both have Kim as heavy favorites to win this thing. So this is pretty much what we're expecting to see at this point. Not so much even a surprise.
Right. And while we're on the topic of editing, there are multiple references by her to Sabrina throughout this episode. She said that Sabrina's not dumb. They're dumb. They being all the other people back at camp. She said that if I don't think I can beat Sabrina, it'd be super to go to the final three with her. Again, signaling that maybe Sabrina gets chopped just before the finale. And there are multiple other quotes in the same vein. So I think one of the themes of the finale is going to be, you know, if Sabrina's still there going to final five, final four, is she going to win immunity and fuck everything up for Kim?
Yeah, that's right. We're definitely, you know, we've talked about it before about Sabrina potentially being Kim's final four buffer. In terms of everyone, Kim needing someone who the other people there with her would want to take out more than her in terms of their status as a jury threat. And we're definitely seeing Sabrina get set up to be that person, which we've been anticipating for a while now.
Right. Given that the reality of the situation, we're assuming at least, is that Kim you know, walks into the final three and wins pretty effortlessly. If they do that, then the finale becomes just 90 minutes of you know, predictable TV. They need to spice it up a little bit, and one of the ways to do that is to instill this fake doubt. So, yeah, is Sabrina going to win immunity and fuck everything up for Kim? Yeah, is Chelsea maybe going to steal a few jury votes from the wrong people? And yeah, stuff like this, which it has no bearing in reality, but which they need to insert to make it more suspenseful.
Yeah, and this is something that actually just occurred to me, but we were talking about a little bit earlier with Alicia and her potential being in the final three with Kim and Chelsea. You know, last season, I think a lot of people were very, very satisfied with the final three, both in terms of gameplay and in terms of development as characters. We knew a lot about the final three, as opposed to historically, there have been some final threes where we just didn't know anything about one or maybe even two of the people. And I think this has been kind of an active effort on the part of the editors to at least get the finalists more time, and I like that.
Sure, I mean, I'd happily go out and say that the Final Fight last season was probably the best overall in terms of, you know, gameplay as a unit. I mean, for instance, in Redemption Island, we had Rob, who obviously played a masterful game, but then you could contrast that with Natalie and Philip. Last season, each of Sophie, Coach, and Albert all played pretty good games, I thought. You know, each of them would have made a good winner of the season.
Yeah, I think the ultimate example of that is Steven and JT, but of course that's Final 2 and not Final 3.
Right, so it's more of an achievement, I guess, if you want to call it that, for all the Final 3 to have this good quality.
Although I would guess you would, a person might be able to argue that if were any of them truly great players, they wouldn't be bringing decent players with them.
That is another good argument, actually. I mean,
I'm actually very, very satisfied, particularly with last season's Final 3, in terms of I was happy to see all of them there, and I would have been satisfied with any of them winning.
Well, do you think there's any other satisfying ending to the season other than Kim winning?
No, I don't. I don't think anything's close.
Not even Tarzan?
I really don't. Not at this point. Oh, Tarzan. It's just out of the realm of possibility.
Tarzan winning the season would make it the greatest of all time, and there wouldn't be any question.
Do you think it's even possible?
No.
No, yeah, I don't think so either. Honestly, and again, I not to skip too far ahead to like our first place equity breakdowns, but I don't even think we're going to bother doing them today, because I think we both have Kim at literally 100% until I have no reason to believe that anything else could possibly happen.
I might give a very minuscule outside shot to like Sabrina or Charles or something, but if you asked me to like stake my net worth on somebody winning, it'd be Kim. There wouldn't be any question about it.
If you were to ask me to stake my net worth on anyone at any point in the history of Survivor winning with 7 through 11 people left, I would put it on Kim every time.
You think?
I can't. I get. I think so, honestly.
No, Boston Robert Redemption
Field, but given their edits through however many episodes, I don't think I've ever been about as confident about who's going to win with so much time left as I am with Kim.
Sure.
Not even, it's like 3.
Not even Boston Rob in Redemption Island?
Boston Rob was like, every once he took the numbers post-merge, that was it.
Or Earl and Fiji, even?
Not Earl and Fiji, no, because Yao Man was there.
Okay, I can buy that.
Yeah, I think Kim is in terms of just no one else having even anything close to a comparable winner edit, I think it's Kim.
But pre-show even, it seemed like 90% of Survivor fans picked Kim to win, and
yeah. It's very, very weird.
And that hasn't faltered over the course of the season.
Yeah, it's like the editor spoiled the season for us in the pre-show clips.
Right. Again, the editor can only really work with what they're given, and if what they're given is that Kim is just far and away the best player there and it's not even close, then that's what we get. That's what we see. I mean.
Yeah, and when they don't, like, such was the situation in Redemption Island, but they had Boston Rob as already a developed character that they could do things with versus with Kim, it's her first time.
Right, and even there you had Redemption Island as a potential spoiler. So, you know, what if Matt comes back? What if Mike comes back? Yeah, you know, what if Grant goes on an immunity run or stuff like that? Whereas here, it doesn't seem like there's any competition at all.
Right, and that's another reason why I would say Boston Rob I didn't have as confident as Kim, is because Redemption Island could have potentially screwed it up with Matt.
Sure. Okay, so where did we leave off when we started going on the tangent?
You want to go to the immunity challenge?
We can talk about cats.
Let's talk about the backlash back at camp when they're offered the reward, sorry.
I was going to suggest we talk about Kat's seemingly incestuous relationship with her cousin.
Yeah, that was weird. Even when they first greeted each other at the mat, it was very weird. They had their own little language. I don't know.
A cat crawling over to, I don't know.
it makes me imagine just, the mind must do just weird things when you haven't seen anyone you know for a month.
Nothing really I'll say about that, except for, as you mentioned, the backlash back at camp, which,
right.
If you want to go into that.
Yeah, sure. This is where we see Chelsea really start throwing the idea of a cat boot around. And this is at least in the episode where we see the cat boot really start coming up. And Chelsea's talking to the people about, you know, oh, we got to take Kat out. And then one of the very telling lines I thought is in one of her confessionals. She said, you know, I just got to talk to Kim as soon as she gets back.
Right. And
throw this idea by her.
And when Kim and the others are still on the reward and Chelsea is throwing the idea in camp, she included Kim in the list of people who would want to go along with it.
Right.
So there's this implicit assumption that Kim needs to assent to any plan that they come up with.
Yeah, that's right. It's a very weird cult-like situation, which is actually something we've seen the last 3 seasons now.
Yeah, you wonder when it's going to stop.
Yeah. All right, yeah, and, you know, Chelsea's floating this cat idea on the grounds of, she doesn't, obviously they're not thrilled with her reward challenge picks, taking Kim and Alicia, But also they're concerned about her status as a jury threat because of what Troy Zan said, once again.
Right, and even if she isn't a jury threat, it might be rational for them to think that she is, given the information that's available to them.
Right, yeah, it doesn't matter if she is truly a jury threat. All that matters is whether people think she's a jury threat.
Right, and this might be why we see Sartan go voted out, if he is voted out. There might be this worry that, okay, people don't like him, but ultimately there are five men on the jury, and he's the last man standing. People might, you know, start to respect his accomplishments. You know that someone like Christina or Alicia is a goat. There's this outside worry that Tarzan might not be. So,
right.
Even though it's 99% sure that you want to sit next to him at the end, he might get voted out just for that reason.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And again, it's really hard to look past five guys sitting there on the jury.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and again, if we can talk about Christina really, really quickly, I think this is more, kind of speaks to the point I was trying to make about the final three being more visible these last couple seasons in terms of anticipating an Alicia, Chelsea, and Kim final three. And then, of course, with Sophie Coach and Albert, is with Christina, we've just seen, like, none of her, much like we saw with Rick last season. It makes it hard for me to imagine her ending up in the finals. Because we would just have nothing, no reason to even know who she was, and certainly no reason to believe she has a shot to win.
Yeah, we don't have this season someone who's completely invisible, like Rick was last season, or Purple Kelly, or Brett, or whoever. But of the people remaining in the game, she is the least developed as a character, and the least visible. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to see her get that traditional first-person boot in the finale spot.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I think, so if we want to go into the immunity challenge, it's very similar to the one we saw in Nicaragua that Jane ended up winning, where you're hanging onto a rope above a pool, and Probst gradually is going to decrease the angle of the inclination, which then is going to make it harder to hold yourself up. Right. This one's actually, you're facing towards the water instead of with your back to it.
Sure. Now, if your cat hit, do you throw the challenge?
That's a good question. I actually haven't even thought about that. And I think the answer, and this is good, this may sound surprising because I'm usually pretty an advocate of throwing challenges unless you think you definitely need it. You've actually made me a believer. You've made a point in one of our previous episodes about at the critical swing points in the game, I would never turn down an opportunity for immunity, I think. And at Final 7, certainly I would be trying for immunity. So I don't think anyone should be throwing, really. I think it's too critical for anyone to be throwing with a great deal of confidence.
Sure, but the way it was portrayed was that the campaign to boot Kat was based on two things. One, obviously what Troy's ancestor, the previous Tribal Council, but also the fact that she was competitive in the immunity challenge right up to the end. She clearly wanted to win it. And this was given as a reason explicitly by Alicia, who said, you know, I originally wanted to put Sabrina, but after she was out first and Kat was second in the challenge, it was like, it became a hard decision.
I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily, but I think Kat was going either way, as long as she didn't win.
Okay.
I don't know. Obviously, I don't know. I wasn't out there, and I'd love to find out more about how much influence Kat's performance in that challenge had on her ultimately being the boot.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. Before we do that, do you think it was right for Kim to throw the challenge?
With an idol, I would probably throw the challenge and play the idol if I thought anything was possible. If I'm Kim, especially after having won reward and winning a couple challenges the last time, right? I'm spacing on which episode I may be confusing things, but Kim's done well in these challenges, and people are expecting her to do well in these challenges. And we even saw Sabrina, like at Tribal Council, say, you know, I know Kim's going to bring it. So if I'm Kim, that's probably alarming me hearing someone say that, and I'm probably going to try to tone it back in challenges. Although Kim had a confessional where she made it very clear, you know, I just don't feel fully confident enough to throw any of these challenges I'm going to be trying.
At the same time, though, if you were going to boot Kim, this would be the right time to do it. Obviously, there have been times in the past where it would have been just as correct, but this is, given what we said about the nature of the Final 7 round in particular, this is the right time to do it if you are going to. So having safety this round from Kim is, you know, more important than it might be, say, the first time she won immunity. Additionally, you're using the fact that she has an idol as a reason to throw it, but it might be a reason to try to win, because now you know that the idol expires next round. So when you get down to Final 6, you can do whatever you want with it. You don't even need to try to win immunity then, if you don't want to.
That's fair enough. Do we know that it definitely expires at Final 6 this round? This season?
That's how it's always worked.
Okay.
That's how it's worked recently when it's been a Final 3 without Redemption Island fucking it up.
Oh, yeah, because that was the thing. Is I remember Coach having his, I think, through the finale last year, through, like, the second Final 5 or something.
Well, I think the idea with that was, if someone was voted out with an idol and then came back in the game, they wanted them to be able to play it. Which I think is stupid, but that was the logic, at least.
Yeah, why reward someone who got voted out with an idol? But yeah, all right, yeah, fair enough. So yeah, of course, in like Heroes and Villains in Nicaragua, it was Final Six.
But,
That's safe, I think, to a
certain. Well, I think the reason they wanted to give them that buffer, if they did get voted out with an idol, was because if someone comes back from Dungeon Island, they should be the first target, pretty much, in every single case. So, to stop it being predictable, now if that person has an idol, then things get shaken up and it becomes more exciting.
I still think it's insane to let someone get voted out, potentially only have to win maybe even just one challenge on Redemption Island to get back in, and then have an idol knowing they're on the bottom of the totem pole.
Right, I think the idea of Redemption Island going that long to begin with is absurd.
Yeah.
But if you go along with that, then it kind of makes sense in its own way.
Yeah, from a production standpoint, I agree, but from a playing standpoint, I would tear my hair out.
Sure. So I don't think there's anything more of interest about the challenge. So do we want to get onto it if we think the cat boot is correct or not?
Well, obviously, I don't think the cat boot was correct.
Of course.
Cat should be staying on TV as long as possible, 24/7.
Well, we get to see her Ponderosa videos and her jury reactions now.
Yeah.
Both of it should be pretty good.
Yeah, okay, this is the thing about the cat boot, again. You want to go ahead first on that? Because I have a couple things to say about it.
Yeah, well, one thing I wanted to bring up is, a lot of people have been saying that it seemed like this decision was made against Kim's wishes, which seems absurd to me, because Kim has control over her vote and Chelsea's vote. She knows that Kat and Sabrina are voting for each other, so there's going to be one vote for each of them. So they only have to swing one person out of Alicia, Christina, and Tarzan to engineer the boot they want, and it seems like she would be able to do that. And if she can't, then both boots are wrong, and she should be gunning for one of Alicia, Christina, and Tarzan.
That's right, and we ultimately see her able to swing around a unanimous vote against Kat, which is not surprising.
Right. She said that she and Chelsea were the swing votes, implying that she had control over the vote going whichever way she wanted it to. I think the reason people are saying this is because of the stuff that she said earlier in the episode about how Kat's my best final three option and all of this stuff.
Okay. Okay, yeah, you're right about that, and that's basically where I want to start with my referencing, which is that conversation to me made me really believe in Alicia in terms of she definitely wants to stay with Kim, and I think Kim has enough information, and this is based solely just what we've seen off TV, and I would imagine that just obviously the more time they spent together, the more Kim felt comfortable with Alicia. If I was Kim, I think at this point I would be content with Alicia, which is why, and it's very painful for me to say this, I think the cat boot was absolutely correct, and for several reasons. First of all, of course, what Troizan said to her at the end of the last Tribal Council, where Troizan didn't say it to me, he said it to Kat, and he went out of his way to say it to Kat, which is obviously bad news if you're in a final against Kat, and certainly if you want to imagine that Troizan's going to be one of the more vocal jurors, which I think is a safe anticipation to be making.
And
the other reason is that, like you saw, Kat was able to hang in there with Kim, and I honestly don't think many other people can in these challenges. And even if you are Kim in such a good position, even with an idol, you're going to want to be able to win those challenges down at the end to make sure that you stay safe and to guarantee your own spot in the end. And it's going to be easier to do if Kat's not there.
Right. So I guess the logic is both Sabrina and Kat will go along with whatever you want. And you don't even need their votes anyway because you have a large measure of control over everybody else. If you're Kim, like we're looking at it from Kim's perspective, both of them you think might potentially win a jury vote, but Kat's better in challenges. So if you're going to take one of them out now, then it might as well be Kat.
Right. And then the other thing is, because it's Final Seven, which is a huge turning point for the billionth time this episode, if you survive that Final Seven boot with your majority alliance in place, you're almost automatically going to make it to the Final Five with that majority alliance in place.
Right, because you need four to have a majority at Final Seven, and then at every point after that, that majority holds strong. And even if you, like, take out one person from it, so similar to what they did with Jane in Nicaragua, then you still have a majority at Final Five, and, like, you have a three-person set there willing to go to Final Three.
Right, exactly. And I think that's one of the arguments you can make for having incentive to maintain the smallest majority possible.
Yeah. Now, one thing we need to discuss is whether we think Alicia, Christina, and Tarzan have anything going on. And the idea seemed absurd, but if you remember, they were all on Old Monona together. It's been mentioned, or at least hinted at, by players in the game in secret scenes and things, and Colton has said that the three of them have something going on. So, now we're in a potentially tricky position if you're Kim, because if you take out Kat or Sabrina, the three of them make it to Final Six intact and could potentially force a tie if they wanted to.
And this, I think, ultimately comes down to what I was just saying about Alicia, which is I think at this point Kim has enough faith in Alicia that this isn't going to happen. And again, I think it's just such an eclectic crew to even come together to what? Go to rocks for each other when Christina and Alicia could both effortlessly make it to Final Five themselves, with Alicia of the mentality that she's going to the Final Three with you anyway?
Sure. Here's a hypothetical for you. You know that one vote's going for Kat and one vote's going for Sabrina no matter what, because the two of them are voting for each other. Now, let's say Kim and Chelsea decide to vote for Kat. Now, if you're Alicia here and you have control over Christina and Tarzan, if you have the three of them vote for Kim, it would be a 3-3-1 tie. So you have three votes on Kim, three votes on Kat, and one vote on Sabrina. And now, potentially, only one person has to swing around and you have enough votes to boot Kim on the revote.
Right, but whose vote was misdirected? Because Kat's not going to get to revote.
Right, sure, but it would be Sabrina in this case.
Okay, but Sabrina would still then be probably not going your side. She would be voting against Kat, I would imagine.
Oh, that's true, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's certainly, as you were beginning it, it sounded interesting, but I think, just given that Kat's going to be the one who can't revote versus Sabrina being the one who can't revote. Whoever they identify as their blindside target can then not flip over to you.
Sure. So if we agree that the Kat boot makes sense, where does Kim go from here?
That's a good question. And I think it's hard to answer this question having already seen the previews for the next episode. And I'm sure you probably feel pretty upset about this as well, because the previews are pretty much all Tarzan based, which probably means the end of his game is soon.
Yeah. This saddens me deeply. Do you think that's correct though for Kim?
I honestly feel like we just haven't seen enough about where Tarzan stands strategically at all, other than he knows roughly what's going on, but we haven't seen him really talk to anyone about the game, certainly since the men have been gone. But that being said, he's still voted with Kim each time, and he seems to not be in a position where Kim wants to take him out just yet. That being said, and this is something I actually want to talk about in terms of just a little bit more about the Kat boot, because we saw Kat leave and take the walk of shame in tears and do her final words in tears. And this is something I talked about the week before, which is if you're going to be booting Tarzan soon, you should be doing it probably before you start taking out the people who think they're definitely with you ahead of Tarzan for sure. Because we saw Kat get super hurt feelings. And I think the more girls Kim votes out while leaving Tarzan in, probably the worst it's going to be for her.
Right. One of the arguments we made a few weeks ago for booting Tarzan after he booted out the rest of the men is that now if Kim makes a final three, she can say, even if she's betrayed some of the women, she can say, look, at least I waited until all the men had gone before we started backstabbing each other. Now that argument doesn't really apply because Kat's already gone, but it still applies to some extent, and you don't want to exacerbate that by like turning on other people too soon and keeping Tarzan around for too long.
Right. Yeah, again, the thing is, I think I'm anticipating a Tarzan boot, which is the whole point I'm trying to make in terms of, I don't know that that's necessarily the conclusion I would have arrived at, because one side of me says, well, I've already done this to Kat. People are aware that I'm this kind of player, and Tarzan's not a threat to me, and he seems to be voting with me. I might as well keep doing it to other people, but I still think that's outweighed by the fact that those other people are going to take it so much worse by Tarzan still being left in.
Sure.
So I think Tarzan makes sense in terms of a jury perspective, which is, I think, where Kim needs to be focusing her attention right now.
Sure. And I think Tarzan is the kind of guy who could be convinced to vote for Kim.
For sure. Oh, so I think Tarzan is the kind of guy who will 100% vote for Kim if she's still left. I think he absolutely recognizes Kim as the strongest player left in the game, and I think that's probably how he's going to end up voting.
Well, if he is genuinely close to Alicia and Christina, I could see him voting for one of them, maybe. Although, if he does leave, then he might consider them to have backstabbed him, and you know, he might want to vote for Kim instead. I think that a Tarzan boot would make sense because, firstly, I think it's important to take out one of the former no-no people. You don't want to let them have a majority of Final Five, even if you don't think that's likely to come about. So you need to take out one of them, and you know, if you leave Alicia and Christine in the game, both of them are good goats for you, just as good as Tarzan would be. And it's probably easy to get one of them booted out at Final Five because no one thinks Tarzan's a threat. They just want to take him to the Final Three anyway.
Yeah, I think, I guess the question is, if you're not taking out Tarzan, who else would you consider? Because I think the one person I'm certainly not considering ever taking out is Chelsea, as I've said before. But if it's not going to be Tarzan, who do you think it could be?
I think it would probably have to be Alicia.
Okay. Do you think there's any merit in Christina here?
If you think you can beat both of them, then you might want to take out Christina because Alicia does seem to think that she's tight with you, you being Kim.
Right.
At the same time, though, if there is one player in the game who's most likely to try to get something together against Kim, I think it probably is Alicia.
Yeah, Kim recognizes that Alicia is delusional to the point that she, Alicia, thinks she can win the game. But if she also recognizes that Kim is a good player, she may do something to take Kim out to then herself win, which we all know is a ridiculous notion, but she doesn't know that, which is, of course, what matters.
Right, and specifically, if she thinks she's in control, then she might want to try to exercise that control by, for instance, voting out Kim, which would be the worry. So,
do you think she could potentially exercise any control were she to be left in a situation somehow at Final Five with herself, Christina, Tarzan, Kim, and Chelsea?
I think if that situation were to arise, then Sabrina would probably be the swing vote. And I think Sabrina is smart enough to know that she probably should vote off Kim.
I have Sabrina out at Final Six. I have the three, Manano, and then Kim and Chelsea.
Oh, okay. That's
interesting. Do you think she could group together Tarzan and Christina?
I don't think she could.
I think she actually may be able to. I think, honestly, any of the three could group together Christina and Tarzan, because I think those two, I don't think either of them has any idea, any notion that anyone's taking for the final three. Honestly. Unless we're just completely not seeing it.
We don't know.
Which is certainly possible. Certainly possible.
Sure. We have to imagine that Kim has had conversations of that nature with Christina and Tarzan at some point.
Right, but I don't think either of them believes Kim. I certainly don't think Tarzan believes him, but I think he understands that he's just going to do what's best for him right now, which is to listen to Kim.
Well, we've already seen that Chelsea, Kat, and Sabrina all believe it, and all three of them are more rational than Tarzan and Christina, so I don't see why they wouldn't believe it as well.
I think they're more aware of the situation and say, well, listen, we were off tribes. She's been with everyone else the entire time. It's been made clear to me by everyone who's been voted out that I'm the one at the bottom.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like unless Kim's really, really goddamn good at this game, they got to understand that she's probably not going to be taking either of them to the finals.
Well, firstly, I think she really is goddamn good at this game.
That's true.
And secondly, it's an entirely plausible scenario that they do indeed group together to try to get out Kim, but she wins immunity at Final Five and Final Four, given her performance and challenges so far.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's an entirely different thing where we're seeing this winner edit not because everyone necessarily gave her the win the whole way, but because she won herself the win the whole way in challenges. I hadn't considered that.
Right, and in a way, it might be easier for her to win in the Final Tribal Council if she does that, because now it's not that she was responsible for everyone getting boosted out and being completely in control. She had to win her way to the end, like Tarzan would have had to, or like these other men would have had to, and I think they might respect that more.
Oh, yeah, if you can win your way to the end, that's a very easy way to make money in terms of if you're on the bottom of an alliance that's already sitting on the jury and you can win your way through and let the people who have to hurt each other's feelings take each other out, then that's good. That's a good spot to be. Right. But it requires winning your way through, which is not easy.
But if she were to do that, she would have won four immunities by that point compared to, I think, maximum like one or two for other people in the game. Like Chelsea's won one, nobody else has won one. So they would have had to win one as well, and they still wouldn't match up to Kim's achievement there.
That's true. Although, and you know, we've seen historically people, just to kind of give examples of what we're talking about, like Bob winning his way through, or like Fabio going on that late run, where everyone would have taken him out had they had the opportunity, but they could not, and thus he was able to sit in front of a jury that was more than willing to not vote for the people he was with.
Sure. So I think that about covers everything. Do we want to make our predictions for next episode then?
Yeah, I think we pretty much have. I think it's going to be Tarzan.
Yeah, I agree it's going to be Tarzan. And then I think in the finals, Kim, I'm not sure exactly what the order's going to be, but I think it doesn't matter. Kim's going to win. She's not going to face any competition, and it's not going to be close.
Yeah, so definitely tune in. Next week, we're going to have Albert on here, and we're going to be previewing the finale. And hopefully, you guys enjoyed this whole episode. And for Dom, I think that's all we have this week. So I'm Colin, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.